It is May 25th, 2023. The Colorado Rockies are 22-29, fifth in the NL West, 9 games back of first in the division, 3.5 games back of the final wild card spot. More moves have been made. Injury updates have been issued. And let's talk Anderson, Kaufman, Mears, Castro, and Trejo. This is Adjusting for Altitude.
Baseball is a difficult game. The average hitter gets on base in less than 40% of their plate appearances. Yet the average pitcher gives up 4 runs every 9 innings pitched. The sport is a challenge on its own. But at Altitude, the problems for baseball players compound. Less break on pitches, balls that fly significantly farther than at sea level, and then after playing in such a treacherous environment, the players play in normality for half of their regular season. Adjustments must be made by those who don the purple pinstripes of the Colorado Rockies. We discuss those adjustments here. This is Adjusting for Altitude with baseball fanatic and aspiring MLB general manager, Christopher Nelson II.
To listeners far and wide across the grid of the planet Earth, welcome to Adjusting for Altitude, breaking down the unique challenges and difficulties faced by the players of the only MLB team that plays a mile above sea level. Streaming on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, or wherever you get your podcasts and are listening to this right now, I am your host, Christopher Nelson II. Of course, you should go follow me on social media at IamTheSecond to keep up with me and my life or interact with me about really anything, not even just Rockies baseball. My DMs are always open. Once again, that's IamTheSecond, IamTheSecond. And we're about to hop into another entertaining discussion about the Colorado Rockies. But if you haven't listened to last week's episode, I'd highly encourage you to do so sometime soon. Last week, we discussed the contributions of Connor Siebold, Peter Lambert, Jake Bird, Randall Grichuk, and Ryan McMahon. We had some interesting conversations about those 5 players. Go ahead and check it out, like I said, whenever you can, preferably sometime soon. But with that said, I hope everybody is having a great week. The Rockies have been a bit up and down recently. They were hot for about a week and a half, maybe 2. And then they kind of, they turned down the intensity a tad bit. And they did also face one of the best teams in baseball in the Texas Rangers. They were swept in Texas over the weekend. That offense has been one of the best offenses in Major League Baseball for the entire season. And that was expected, especially given the struggles that our pitching staff has encountered thus far in 2023. But we returned home on Monday to begin a 4-game series with Miami, of which we took 3 of 4 games. Not too shabby. That included a walk-off this afternoon. And all things considered, not too bad. Not too bad from a ball club that has aspirations of playing 500 baseball this season. Only 7 games behind that pace, at least. And there's plenty of time to catch up. But they also made a few moves over the last week as well from an operational perspective. Let's see what's been going on.
The Colorado Rockies are a Major League Baseball organization with many happenings and occurrences. Chris, what's been going on?
All right, so earlier in the week, the first move the Rockies made was to sign some pitching depth. Luis Sessa was put, I believe, on waivers or DFA'd by the Cincinnati Reds over the last week, a few weeks ago, I guess, and the Rockies picked him up off of waivers, or again, after he was designated for assignment by the Cincinnati Reds, they signed him to a minor league deal. Now, Luis Sessa has the potential to be a pretty solid depth piece for this Colorado Rockies team. Throws a fastball, slider, changeup combo, solid velocity on all those pitches. Recently, he's been used as a starter, which is, I think, a complete misuse of him. At least his career would suggest so. He's been a much better reliever than he has been a starter over the course of his career. His worst year as a reliever, he had a 108 ERA plus, 8 percentage points better than the major league average pitcher. And his best year as a reliever was a 99 ERA plus. Actually, sorry, I misspoke. His worst year as a reliever was a 108 ERA plus. His best year as a starter has been a 99 ERA plus. So, for what it's worth, it seems like Luis Sessa has been a much better reliever. Hopefully, the Rockies use him in that regard in AAA, which is where he was assigned. It seems like, however, he's going to begin his AAA tenure as a starter. So we'll see how that evolves over the next few weeks, months, or however long he's in the minor league system before potentially he gets called up to contribute at the major league level. In other news, Matt Caracitti was promoted to the 26-man roster. So Matt Caracitti is a relief pitcher who's been in the Rockies organization before. In fact, he actually, I believe, made his major league debut with the Rockies back in 2016, but he ended up wandering away from the organization. I think he played for Seattle back in 2019, but he really hasn't been in the major leagues since then, and the Rockies signed him as a free agent during the winter of 2022. He was promoted to the 26-man roster earlier in the week. Again, the depth pitching-wise for this team has been significantly hammered with the injuries that have been going around, and Matt Caracitti has been one of the better relievers in the AAA system that the Rockies possess. Obviously, Riley Pint was given a chance, making his major league debut earlier in the week against the Reds last week, and didn't do too well. So Matt Caracitti was given a chance. He really only throws two pitches, sinker and a forkball. So far, it hasn't been effective in the outings that he's had for the Rockies thus far in 2023. He's 1-1 with a 4 ERA and a 1.44 whip in AAA. And thus far in the major leagues, he has thrown two innings and he's given up 6 runs. So it'll be interesting to see how much longer Matt is on the 26-man roster. Obviously, Nick Mears is slated to return from injury sometime soon. So the logical move would be to send Caracitti back to AAA once Mears is ready to contribute for the team once again. Again, in other news, Fernando Abad was DFA'd. Now, this is unfortunate because we talked about Fernando in a little bit of depth last week. We discussed how he's been a major league pitcher who's fairly solid, all things considered. Obviously, he's on the older end. He's 37 years old, but still figured he'd be able to give you some solid innings. He hasn't looked terrible from a pitcher perspective. He's tapped 94 with the fastball, which for, again, a 37-year-old isn't terrible. Unfortunately, he just hasn't been effective, all things considered. He's thrown 2.2 innings pitched thus far in 2023, only 67 pitches, and he has a 10.13 ERA, a 15.28 FIP, and a 3 whip. His overall low velocity for a relief pitcher is probably what's made the Rockies give up on him at the major league level for the moment. Again, he was DFA'd, so he could very well be reassigned to AAA if he goes through that process without being picked up by another team. But yeah, the low velo is kind of killing him. We also do have two other relievers in Suter and Hand that kind of lock down the need for a lefty out of the bullpen. But to that point, as a left-handed reliever, your primary job is to be able to get other left-handed batters out. Fernando hadn't been able to do that, at least over the weekend in Texas. He gave up a home run to Corey Seager and a pretty solid base hit to Nathaniel Lowe. All things considered, it doesn't look like Abad will be back on the Rockies' 26-man roster for the remainder of the year unless something or some things were to go very terribly wrong. Just the fact that he hasn't been very consistent, low velo. His changeup also hasn't been very effective. Like, you can be a Brent Suter, for instance, and we've talked about this in a decent amount of length when we covered Brent a few weeks ago. You can be a low velo reliever even, as long as your changeup is effective and the differential in velocity between the fastball and changeup is effective. If that's not the case, then you're really not going to succeed. I think the differential with Abad has been perfectly fine. Unfortunately, the average exit velo he gives up on that changeup is 100 miles per hour, which is not even just a hard hit ball, but it's a barreled ball. So people are seeing and hammering that changeup pretty solidly thus far in 2.2 innings pitched. All things considered, if that's it for Fernando Abad in the Colorado Rockies uniform, it was short-lived. There was some potential, but all in all, not the greatest depth piece that the Rockies will be relying on for the rest of the season, presumably. Other than that, we have some injury updates that we'll go through really quickly before diving into the rest of our analysis on this episode. CJ Krohn was placed on the IL with back spasms a few weeks ago. His return is going to be a little bit later than expected. He still hasn't resumed baseball activities, and according to him, doesn't really feel ready to do so. He's not in a place right now where he either trusts his back to be able to participate in those baseball activities, or he's simply still experiencing back spasms here and there. So solid expectation for a return on Crone will be at least a few more weeks or so, it sounds like. So Michael Tolia will continue to get some solid, consistent playing time for the Rockies over that time span. Noah Davis had elbow inflammation issues dating back, it feels like almost a month. I want to say it's almost a month since he's pitched for the Colorado Rockies, but he will return after his rehab assignment is complete. On May 26th, he's slated to start for the ACL Rockies, which, for those of you who are unaware, is the Arizona Complex League Rockies. It's a lot of the younger guys who haven't yet made it up to Major League Ball, so Single A and such. So Noah will start a game for them this week, actually tomorrow. And then on May 29th, he'll throw a bullpen session and he'll be reevaluated. And if the observation of his bullpen goes well, he will be assigned to make a rehab start for AAA Albuquerque. And he could be back on the Major League roster within the next 2 weeks or so. It'll be interesting to see how long it takes for Noah to get back. He's been one of the more promising starters in this rotation thus far. Just, we like the variety of pitches he throws, and the fact that as a rookie, he's been able to command those pretty decently well. So never a bad thing to have a solid starter in your rotation. Nick Mears had a left oblique strain going back, I believe, like a week and a half or 2 weeks ago. May 30th is his expected return date, so that's within the next week. Obviously, that'll be a much needed boost for the bullpen, who has had to dig into the AAA depth a little bit more than they would have liked to. So getting Nick Mears back will be a very, very big net positive, and we'll actually talk about him on today's episode, as I mentioned earlier. So stay tuned for that. Antonio Senzatella had a UCL sprain. Now, that's obviously something that the Rockies are going to be very, very concerned about. They're going to treat him very, very carefully over the next few weeks, months, etc. The reports suggest that he could possibly return sometime in August. So it's obviously going to be a little while before Senzatella resumes baseball activities and before he makes his return to the Coors Field mound, or just any mound in general for the Colorado Rockies. So we'll stay tuned and keep tabs on that. Dinelson Lamet has experienced a very interesting circumstance during his rehab from lower back stiffness. He's actually made a few rehab starts for the AAA Albuquerque team. And the interesting thing about this is, obviously, we know that Lamet has struggled as a reliever thus far this season, but the fact that the Rockies are ramping him up to be a starter, he's already thrown two rehab starts at AAA and he's been assigned to a third. It could be interesting. It could be an interesting thing for Lamet, who actually had his best season in the major leagues in 2020 as a starting pitcher. Now, there are a few differences between 2020 and 2023 Dinelson Lamet. Nothing really technically that I've noticed in going through the film necessarily, but one thing that I did notice is that his velo is significantly down, like 3 or so miles per hour on the fastball down. And funny enough, when he was throwing harder in that earlier stage of his career, he was walking fewer batters, if you can believe that. He's forever been a slider fastball guy. Those have been his two primary pitches for pretty much the entirety of his MLB career. But he used to throw the fastball upwards of 97, 98 miles an hour. He does not do that anymore. So it'll be interesting to see if during this ramp-up process, we see a few extra ticks in velocity, and if that impacts his effectiveness, if he is ultimately called upon to be a starter for this Colorado Rockies team. Another injury to note, unfortunately, that occurred today, as of me recording this at least, during the Rockies game against the Marlins, which they ended up walking off after being up 6-2 in the ninth inning. During that ninth inning, Brenton Doyle went back on a ball that ended up being a home run, but he leapt and crashed into the wall hard. He hit his knee against that padded wall, and he had to be carted off the field. So another injury we'll keep tabs on for the Rockies. Obviously, I've made my piece known about Brenton Doyle and that I'm not the biggest fan of everything that he does technically, but from an output perspective, he's certainly having an impact, and I do believe he is a future superstar for this Rockies team. Unfortunate to see him go down with injury, but still good that the Rockies were able to pull out the win despite that injury circumstance happening so late in the game. So that's what's been going on operationally within the Colorado Rockies organization. With that said, I think it's time we discuss some in-depth analytics. Three Rockies pitchers, two Rockies position players. That's coming up next. Stay tuned. Welcome back. Y'all, you already know what time it is. It's time for Five-Man Analysis.
Using advanced MLB analytics and eye test comparisons, let's discuss the performance of five Colorado Rockies thus far this season. This is Five-Man Analysis.
A lot of noobs, relatively speaking, to this Colorado Rockies team for us to dive into on today's episode. And let's kick it off with player number one.
Player number one.
Chase Anderson. So currently, Chase is probably right around the fourth starter in the Colorado Rockies rotation. He was picked up about a week and a half ago off of waivers from Tampa Bay, like we discussed on last week's episode. But again, given the fact that Kyle's still in the rotation, that Austin Gomber's still in the rotation, and that Connor Siebold, who is relatively new to the rotation but has been around the organization for a little bit longer, I'd say Chase probably slots in as the fourth starter in the rotation at the moment. Currently for the Colorado Rockies, he is 0-0 with a 1.69 ERA in 10 innings pitched. He has walked three batters. He struck out four batters, good for an ERA plus of 3.04 with a 3.65 FIP and a 1.13 WHIP. So let's dive into some of Chase's stuff at the moment. He's not thrown a ton of innings thus far this season, so his percentile rankings are very, very limited. Thus far, we know that he is 34th percentile in Major League Baseball in fastball velocity, which would obviously put him in the blue, below average. Fastball spin, he's in the 59th percentile, which is above Major League average, and it's not spinny enough to the point that it would make him necessarily ineffective at Coors Field within that environment. Other than that, there really aren't many other percentile statistics that they've measured, given, again, the small sample size of the innings that he's thrown. But we do have a solid amount of pitches to analyze distribution-wise. So far into 2023, Chase Anderson is working about seven pitches. He's thrown at least seven pitches. He's really only working about five. So let's get into them real quick. Four-seam fastballs being thrown at about 94 miles an hour, 32% of the time. The cut fastballs being thrown at about 90 miles an hour, 27% of the time. The changeups being thrown at about 84 miles an hour, 18% of the time. The sinkers being thrown at 94 miles an hour as well, 11% of the time. And his sweeper is being thrown at 82 miles an hour, 6% of the time. Those are the five pitches that he works the most. He has also thrown a curveball and a slider thus far this season. The curveball is clocked in at about 79 miles an hour. He's throwing that only 5% of the time. And then the slider, he's only thrown two sliders all season long. And that has averaged 85 miles per hour velocity-wise. And again, that would be good for 1% of the time, pitch percentage-wise. Overall, I think the consensus that I have on Chase is that he's a solid pitcher with potential to earn a role in this rotation for the rest of the year, much like Jose Ureña did last season, although I do think Chase Anderson is better overall than Ureña is. It's a similar type of situation. You pick up a guy during the middle of the season or just during the season in general, and this guy performs well enough to the point where you're like, all right, he's a net positive for us, all things considered, and especially considering the fact that the Rockies lack significant pitching depth and have sustained a number of injuries in that department. It would not be surprising to see Chase Anderson earn a role in this rotation throughout the rest of the season. Overall, he's got very solid velocity on all his pitches. As we just discussed, he throws five of them. All the five that he throws, it's solid. It's consistent. And that's what you'd expect from a guy who's been in the major leagues for about 9 years or so. Since 2014, I believe. So it's good to see very balanced pitcher, all things considered. The cutter sinker changeup combo could very well pay dividends for him in a way that it's paid some dividends for Jake Bird. But the only difference between Bird and Anderson, of course, being that Bird doesn't throw the cutter nearly as much as Anderson does. For Anderson, it's his second most thrown pitch. So the idea that he does throw a cutter, sinker, and changeup could be very, very promising. And that's the consensus I've come to thus far this season in the, I guess, 10 or so innings that he's pitched. Obviously, again, not a large sample size, but going forward, making projections about the rest of the season, I think that could bode well for Kyle, or for Chase, rather. I don't know why I have Kyle Freeland on my mind. But for Chase Anderson, that is the case. And he keeps the ball on the ground well. I believe he has something like a 43% ground ball rate. thus far this season. And yeah, that is the case. 43% ground ball rate to a fly ball rate of 35%. Obviously, it's better to have a higher ground ball rate and a lower fly ball rate if you're a pitcher, especially at Coors Field. So everything, all those particular aspects of who Chase Anderson is, has me very highly encouraged about him. And the eye test would suggest the same thing, in my opinion. He works the cutter very well, glove side, at least in the two starts he's had thus far for the Rockies. And the sinker works arm side very well. So for those of you who aren't aware of that terminology, all it means when a pitcher works glove side is that their pitch moves in a way that moves towards their glove hand. So if you're a right-handed pitcher like Chase is, it means that he throws that cutter and it works well towards his glove side, moving right to left across the plate, vice versa for a lefty, obviously. And then arm side would be the opposite, where the pitch that he throws works back towards his pitching arm, so back towards the right side of the plate. And Chase has worked that very well. That's kind of what you have to do if you throw a cutter-sinker combo, is you have to make sure that you can get that cutter to the outside part of the plate against right-handed batters and inside to right-handed batters with the sinker. So I think he's done that fairly well. He hits his spots fairly consistently, which is also good to see. Obviously, fastball command is very, very important for any pitcher. But for a Rockies team that struggled to have guys that have consistent command, I think the fact that they have one right now in Chase Anderson is very promising. And all in all, I think the biggest plus that I've seen, besides the plus potential of the cutter sinker combo, is that he generates very, very weak contact on his changeup. Obviously, we've discussed the importance of having a changeup as a pitcher who pitches at altitude where pitches break less, just being able to throw a pitch that can make the hitter think from a velocity perspective and a changing velocity perspective. The fact that he generates a 72 mile per hour exit velocity on his changeup is really good. That might actually be the best pitch exit velo for that changeup on the team. Like, that's how good it is. He hasn't given up a hit on a changeup thus far this season, has Chase Anderson. So again, just excellence is the name of the game right now, at least 10 innings pitched into the season for Chase Anderson. Can he keep it up? I guess we'll find out. Only time will tell. But the only adjustments that I'd suggest for Chase to make would be to use that sweeper more and maybe use the four-seam a little bit less in favor of the sinker. So like we discussed a few episodes ago, the sweeper is just a slider that has a little bit less vertical drop. In other words, it stays more on plane. It's a lot more cutter-like, but it's thrown like a slider. So it's just a more lateral moving slider effectively, and he only throws it 6% of the time, like we said. It's a really good pitch for him. Right? The batting average against is 200. The expected batting average against is 145. Exit velo is pretty solid at 85 miles per hour. All things considered, I think that's a pitch he's got to throw more. Now, the spin rate on it isn't going to be super deceptive. It's only at about 2,400, which isn't bad. It's not great. Usually, you want breaking pitches that are above 2,500 RPMs in order for them to be effective. And that is definitely showing thus far this season with Chase, in that the whiff rate on that pitch for him is only 14%. All in all, I think if he uses that sweeper more, it'll make his cutter more effective. And the cutter is a pitch he throws 27% of the time. So anything that can make that pitch more deceptive is certainly welcome. I think that sweeper could do just that. But in terms of throwing the four-seam fastball less, I think he's just got to throw that sinker a little bit more. The sinker has a batting average against of 222 at the moment, an expected batting average, sure, of 303. But I think if he utilizes that sweeper more, it makes the cutter more deceptive. It makes the sinker that much better. That three-pitch mix of cutter, sinker, sweeper should certainly be on his radar. And I think the fact that his four-seam is at an expected batting average of 277, 277, 303, I mean, there's a pretty significant difference there. But I think the sinker has more potential than the four-seam does. Obviously, he's going to stick with the four-seam as his primary pitch, but maybe instead of throwing it 32% of the time, we see it drop to maybe 27, 26, maybe almost even in terms of its relation to the sinker. Maybe he throws them almost the exact same amount of the time, something like that. An adjustment that sees him throw the sinker more that sees him throw the four-seam less and that sees him throw the sweeper a little bit more, I think would give him more long-term success. And the metrics we'll monitor in that regard will be sinker and sweeper usage percentage, obviously. But something I want to give you guys to watch for whenever Chase is out on the mound for the Colorado Rockies, because that's ultimately what this is about, right? I'm here to give you as the listener something to watch for on the field when you're watching the Colorado Rockies, whether that's on TV, most likely going to be on TV, because it's a lot harder to pick up these little nuances about pitchers and their movement, pitch movement, when you're at the game in person. But ultimately, things to watch for, that's what I want to give you guys, because that's what really makes this game fun. It's hard to enjoy baseball unless you understand the people who are playing the game to a certain extent, right? It's going to be hard for you to understand whether a guy's having a good day, a bad day on any given day if you don't understand who he is as a player. So that's kind of another side goal I have with this podcast, is to help you guys as the listeners who are Rockies fans understand what to watch for to see how effectively guys are playing on any given day. So things to watch for Chase Anderson whenever he's out on the bump: watch his utilization of the sinker-cutter combo to gauge how well he's pitching on any particular day. Like I said earlier, he likes to work the sinker arm side, and he likes to work the cutter glove side. So if he's effectively commanding those two pitches, it'll probably be a good day for him. If he's not, then it probably won't be. Other than that, that wraps up Chase Anderson. Let's move on to player number two. Player number two is going to be Carl Kauffman. Now, I kind of debated whether I should talk about Carl Kauffman on today's episode, given that he really hasn't been up for the longest period of time. But then again, I thought to myself, well, I'm going to cover Chase Anderson a little bit, so I might as well cover Carl Kauffman. And also, we can make some projections going forward about Carl Kauffman, because Carl Kauffman was a pretty high draft pick for the Colorado Rockies back in 2019. I think I said this on last week's episode. He was like a second round pick or something, like 35th overall, I believe, out of Michigan. I do know that for sure. But Carl currently finds himself as the fifth starter in the rotation, again, as an injury replacement. Logically, we'd assume that once Noah Davis gets healthy and is ready to return from his elbow inflammation, he'll probably slot back into the rotation and Carl Kauffman will get demoted yet again. Carl hasn't been the most solid in AAA thus far this season, but again, it just goes to show the lack of depth that the Rockies currently possess in the area of starting pitching and pitching in general. Carl made his debut against the Rangers last week, and he made another start earlier in the week against the Miami Marlins as well. So far in those two starts, he's 0-2 with a 9.35 ERA, 8.2 innings pitched. He has generated 5 walks, 6 strikeouts, good for a 55 ERA plus, a 5.47 FIP, and a 2.08 WHIP. All things considered, Carl hasn't thrown enough, similar to Chase Anderson this season, to be put in the larger array of MLB percentile rankings, but we do have his pitch distribution, so let's take a look at that really quickly. So far in 2023, Carl is working 5 pitches: a sinker that he throws at 90 miles an hour 30% of the time, a four-seam that he's working at 90 miles an hour 27% of the time, a changeup that he's working at 86 miles per hour 20% of the time, a slider that he's working 84 miles per hour at 19% of the time, and a cutter that he's working at 89 miles an hour 4% of the time. Carl Kauffman, I think, is in a place where I'm not fully ready to give a consensus about him going forward, just because there's no way to project how he's going to make adjustments, and he's only thrown 8.2 innings in the major leagues as compared to a guy like Chase Anderson, who, while he's only thrown 2 or 10 innings pitched this season roughly, has a whole like 7 or 8 years of experience prior to this. So unlike Chase, Carl is in a similar situation in that he hasn't thrown many innings, but I do think we can make some projections based on how he's performed so far this season. The consensus I've come to thus far is that he has definitely struggled in his first few outings. That's very apparently obvious. But while he might improve overall and lower his ERA, lower his strikeout-to-walk ratio, or improve, rather, his strikeout-to-walk ratio, he doesn't figure to be a successful Rockies pitcher in the long term. I just think the fact that he's a low velo pitcher, just all things considered, all his pitches are fairly low velocity wise. The fastball has low velo, which is going to be problematic. I think for a few reasons. Number one, his changeup is not that much slower than his fastball, and his fastball is already pretty slow. He throws his fastball at about 90 miles an hour. Like I said, changeup is thrown at 86. Like, that differential is not very good. We'd prefer it to be in the range of about 9-10 miles an hour velocity difference. But again, he's got time to work on it. But another discouraging thing that I've noted is that his changeup so far in his first few outings has been getting hammered. That's the pitch he throws the third most of all the pitches in his arsenal. He's giving up a 250 batting average against, but it has an expected batting average of 307 and an average exit velo of 96. Again, the changeup is one of the slower pitches that pitchers throw. The fact that it's being hit the hardest of all the pitches that he throws is a concerning trend that is going to need to be improved upon. All things considered, in the department of breaking pitches, he only throws one. It's his slider. And that's fine. Like I said, you don't need to throw a curveball in order to succeed at Coors Field in the long term. Unfortunately, his slider spin rate and the low velo that he throws the slider at, something like 84 miles an hour, is really going to make it an ineffective pitch. It's actually the only pitch that he doesn't have a strikeout on thus far this season. He has four strikeouts on the fastball, and then one strikeout on a changeup, and one strikeout on a sinker. He hasn't thrown the cutter enough for that to be a pitch that we'd consider like a part of his repertoire, even though he has thrown seven of them. I don't think I'd consider it necessarily part of his repertoire at the moment, so that would make the slider the only main pitch that he throws a lot of the time that he doesn't have a strikeout on. That's concerning. It's concerning when you can't strike out batters a lot on your primary breaking pitch. And that's also coupled with what I've seen in the parts of his start that I was able to watch. Just poor command and control of all pitches, which again is to be expected out of a guy who's a rookie, to be fair. But again, it's just not good. The command and control of all pitches has just not been good. The cutter has arguably been his best pitch when he's thrown it, and he's not throwing it a lot. He only threw it a few times in his major league debut start against Texas, and he hasn't thrown it since. He didn't throw it at all in the game and his start against the Marlins earlier this week, which I found kind of interesting. All in all, I think the adjustments that Carl's going to want to make to give himself the best chance to succeed as a pitcher at Coors Field would be to throw that cutter more. Like we said, his slider is not very effective. It's very ineffective, just the way it is being thrown at the moment with the low spin rate and the low velo. So doing anything to help that pitch be more effective will really help Carl's chances of being a better starting pitcher. Throwing that cutter more would be a great start. Increased cutter usage would make not only the slider more effective, but it'd also make the sinker more effective, and it'd make his changeup, which, like we said earlier, is being absolutely hammered, more effective as well. It's a similar situation that Chase Anderson has going on, in that Chase has found a way to balance the sinker cutter changeup a lot better than Carl has thus far in his career. And again, this all makes sense, right? Carl's a rookie, but that's going to need to be an adjustment that he makes, balancing out that cutter, sinker, changeup usage in a way that allows his changeup to be more deceptive, in a way that allows his slider to be more effective, considering it's not going to be effective as is, just from a purely like the perspective that it is what it is. Like it's not high spin rate, it's not high velo. So all in all, I think throwing the cutter more will make Carl a better pitcher. Some metrics we'll monitor with Carl will be his cutter usage, obviously, and we'll also monitor that changeup exit velo. So those will be the two that we'll see how they kind of work with each other and within the context of his arsenal as a whole. If that cutter usage rate does indeed go up, I think we'd expect to see the slider batting average against, which currently sits at 571, go down. Like, the expected batting average against on his slider at the moment is 390. I think even that could be expected to go down if he throws the cutter a little bit more. And we'd expect to see the changeup exit velo go down as well, considering he'd be throwing another pitch that batters would have to worry about. And all in all, I think that's what we'll monitor for Carl in the near future. Obviously, the more starts he gets under his belt, the larger sample size we'll have to evaluate. But things to watch for in terms of Carl's starts, if you're interested in seeing, is he having a good day? Is he having a bad day? Watch his fastball command and control. The fastball so far has been his best pitch. It's the pitch that he is very clearly relying on to be his best pitch and to be the pitch he uses to set up all his others. He has 4 strikeouts, like I mentioned earlier, on the fastball. Expected batting average against of 249, even though the current batting average against is 308. I think that he has a chance to make that pitch even better the more he develops those other pitches. But watch for his fastball command and control to stabilize. If it's stabilizing and he's being able to hit his spots in and out of the zone, then I think he'll set himself up to have a better start, and vice versa if he's not being able to control or command his fastball on any given day. Time for player number 3. Player number 3 is going to be Nick Mears. So, like I mentioned last week, Nick was acquired off of waivers from the Texas Rangers, funny enough, over the offseason. His current role for the team is as a middle reliever, just to eat up an inning or so around the 6th or 7th inning. Currently on the season, he doesn't have a ton of innings pitched, only 6, but in those 6 innings pitched, he is 0-0 with a 3 ERA, 4 walks, 8 strikeouts, a 1.75 ERA plus, a 2.61 FIP, and a 1.33 WHIP. So far for Nick on the season, he's, again, finding himself in the similar situation that Chase and Carl are finding themselves in that they simply haven't thrown enough innings to be put across the percentile distribution charts. So the only things we know about him are that he's in the 87th percentile in fastball velocity and in the 27th percentile in fastball spin rate. Not too bad, all things considered. Like we said, we like the low spin rate fastball. That has potential to succeed and play well at Coors Field. The consensus that I have overall on Nick is that I think he has a solid potential. I think he could be a very solid reliever for this club. Here's why. Here is his pitch distribution. He throws really only 2 pitches, a 4-seam and a curveball. Throws the 4-seam at 96 miles an hour, 71% of the time. He throws the curveball 80 miles an hour, 28% of the time. And then he's also thrown in a slider, but that's very infrequently. He's only thrown 2 of those this season, 85 miles an hour and 2% of the time. Overall, I think this is pretty solid. I know you don't want to have, or at least I've said, you don't want to have a pitcher at Coors Field whose primary breaking pitch is a curveball. That's not ideal. It can work, but it's not ideal. Nick has made it work. Nick's curveball shows a lot of promise. So much promise, actually, that it hasn't been put into play yet. He's thrown 28 of them. Not a single one of the 28 curveballs that he's thrown has been put into play, and he has 6 strikeouts on that curveball. 6 of his 8 are on the curveball. That's pretty impressive. That's a good start to your tenure as a Colorado Rocky, the fact that you have 6 strikeouts on your primary breaking pitch before it's even been put into play. So the curveball shows a lot of promise. And likewise, the low spin rate, high velocity fastball is very promising as well. He's just throwing it by people. The fact that if you can just, the better you are at throwing a fastball by a person rather than relying on that movement and that break to deceive hitters, is going to give you a higher opportunity to succeed at Coors Field, as we've talked about at length in the past. So that is very promising as well for Nick. His curveball misses bats, at least based on my eye test. His curveball has been very good at missing bats. So that curveball, those statistics, at least in terms of the curveball, are not deceptive. He does miss bats very well, which is kind of interesting because his curveball isn't really thrown with high spin rate, only at about 2,400 RPMs. And like we mentioned last week when we were talking about Jake Bird, Jake's curveball is up around 2,800 RPMs. There are some better curveballs in the major leagues that are thrown over 3,000 RPMs. So again, Nick's curveball doesn't have the greatest spin rate, and yet it's still been effective in the few outings that he's had thus far this season, both at home and on the road. To note, also, his fastball, like I said, has been effective. The eye test that I've seen, at least in the outings that I've seen of his, would reciprocate that his fastball has been very effective when it's been located. That's been the biggest knock on Nick, is that he has been unable to hammer in on his delivery consistently. He does have a quicker motion, which can tend to lead to more wild pitches here and there, and bigger misses in terms of control. But I think that's just stuff he can work out technically throughout the course of his career. So that's not something to be super dissuaded about, that inability to control the fastball here and there. The slider, however, is, if there was something that I would be concerned about in terms of Nick, it'd probably be the fact that he's kind of toyed with the slider a little bit and that it isn't very good. He's only thrown two. Like I said, the two that I went back to watch the film of both of them, and the first one was like 83 miles an hour. It was very barely resemblant of a slider. I don't even know what it was. It didn't even look like a slider. And then the other one missed location very badly. So that's going to have to be a pitch, if he really wants to add that to his arsenal, he's going to have to work on. But I think the curveball fastball combo has been very effective. So I think the only adjustments that I'd make in that regard would be to, again, continue refining that control and command of the fastball to better set up the curveball. And then once you've established fastball command and control, it makes it easier to even flip that execution in terms of, well, now we might want to start some batters off with a curveball and then finish them off with a fastball, that type of ordeal. So the more he refines his command and control of the fastball, the better he'll be able to mess around with those type of situations strategically. His fastball is very big. I think he needs to trust that to win him more at-bats than not. And I think he'll be putting himself in a position to be one of the better relievers on the team. Some metrics we'll monitor in terms of Nick's performance will be the curveball exit velocity and the fastball strikeout percentage. The current exit velocity that he has on his curveball is, well, not recorded. You know why? He hasn't given up a hit on one yet. He hasn't given up a ball put in play on the curveball yet. So once people eventually start putting the curveball in play, we'll truly get to see and analyze how effective that pitch is, given the unique circumstances that it has, being a higher velocity curveball and a lower spin rate curveball. So we'll keep tabs on that throughout the season as the season goes along, once he returns from his injury. Also, the fastball strikeout percentage, like I said, once he establishes better control and command of that fastball, we might expect to see those strikeouts on the fastball go up a little bit as they start to mess around with some strategic things, messing around with batters, working off speed to fastball, not necessarily always fastball to off speed. So those are the analytics behind Chase Anderson, Carl Kauffman, and Nick Mears thus far in 2023. Let's cover a few position players. AFA returns in just a second. Stay tuned. Welcome back yet again. So we've covered our three pitchers for this episode. Let's dive into our two position players.
Player number four
is going to be Harold Castro. Now, Harold was signed as a free agent over the offseason, I believe to a minor league contract, but he earned his way onto the major league roster with a solid spring. Currently, his role on the team is as a platoon second baseman with the guy that we'll discuss after we discuss Harold, Alan Trejo. So he's kind of been platooning with Alan in terms of who's starting on any given day. Harold is obviously a left-handed batter, so he starts against right-handed pitchers, and vice versa with Alan, who's a right-handed batter, typically starting against left-handed pitchers. So that's currently the role that Harold possesses, is as a platoon second baseman. He doesn't really play the outfield anymore at this point in the season, just given the outfield depth that the Rockies have relied on and the backlog that they've had in that department of the team, so much so that they've had to DFA guys like Jonathan Daza. Currently, Harold bats around 6th to 8th in the lineup. It really depends on who's in the lineup on any given day. If there are younger hitters in the lineup, Harold will usually bat ahead of them. If there aren't as many younger players in the lineup, he'll probably bat towards the bottom end. But currently on the season, in 31 games played, Harold is batting .264 with a .283 on base percentage and a .616 OPS on base plus slugging. He hasn't hit a home run yet. He has 15 RBIs. He's walked 3 times, struck out 16 times, good for an OPS plus of 60 with 0 stolen bases and 0 errors made defensively. Currently, for Harold, there aren't a ton of percentile rankings up simply because he's not an everyday player, but the ones that we do have aren't the most promising, as would be suggested by the 60 OPS plus. His max exit velocity is in the 13th percentile. His sprint speed is actually in the 42nd percentile, which is funny for a guy who has such positional versatility, including the outfield. For him to not have a higher sprint speed than the 42nd percentile is kind of interesting. He is above major league average, in outs above average, in the 60th percentile in that category, and his arm strength is in the 7th percentile. All in all, I think the consensus that we can come to on Harold thus far in the season is that he's a very solid contact hitter who plays solid defense. Thus far this season, Harold has really struggled to make solid contact. The highest exit velocity he has on any given pitch group is on fastballs, which would make sense, but it's only about 88 miles an hour, which might not seem bad, but it really isn't great, all things considered. Couple that with the fact that he's really not hitting off-speed pitches very well, only at about a .250 clip with an expected batting average of .231. Harold is not going to be a guy that you want on your team on an everyday basis. He's perfect in the platoon role and in the spot in the lineup that he is hitting in. Again, the defense has been solid. He hasn't made an error yet, but he's not really a positive either defensively or offensively. Defensively, he makes the routine plays that he needs to make without really messing anything up. Offensively, he's, again, the contact hitting aspect means he doesn't put as many balls in gaps as he probably could, considering he's more focused on just making contact, hence contact hitter. And that's what the eye test would suggest based on what I've seen. He's able to poke pitchers' pitches and put them in play and even get hits on them here and there. But again, not a guy who's going to hit for a ton of power. I think he hit 7 home runs in 2022. That's just not his game. Couple that with the fact that his stance and his swing don't really make him a power threat. Oftentimes, it just seems like he's just going through the motions, not from like a mental perspective, but just from the perspective that he's just moving the bat through the zone. It almost feels like there's very limited load and coil that would allow him to have a higher bat speed. And it just seems like he's just moving the bat through the zone, which I guess for a contact hitter, sometimes he is just trying to put a bat on the ball. But again, it can be frustrating sometimes. Now, he's had some very funny little doink hits with this approach, but again, doink hits don't necessarily win you games consistently. They can win you games in a pinch when you need a hit. But if you're consistently just poking pitches, it's like, now all of a sudden we're starting to understand why the 60 OPS is a thing. So I think the adjustments that I'd suggest for Harold would be to just take a bigger swing at least more often than you currently are. Like, he has solid bat-to-ball skills, and those could really translate into more extra base hits and more solid extra base hits if he simply took a bigger swing and loaded himself more. He has a more open stance right now. He gets set fairly early in the pitcher's delivery. And all in all, if he just loaded up, and like I said a little bit earlier, just coiled back a little bit more, getting some more bat speed, I think he could put some balls in gaps a lot better, maybe even get some triples. I don't know why he finds himself in the 42nd percentile in sprint speed, but I do think he had a few triples in spring training. He's certainly capable of putting a ball in a gap and running it out to third base, that is. So I think in terms of Harold, that's really about it. Some metrics that we'll monitor with Harold will be his overall exit velo to see if he can get an overall exit velo that touches like mid-80s, all pitches considered, maybe even upper 80s. And then we'll also monitor his slugging percentage. His slugging percentage is really not amazing. I think the highest slugging he currently has is on his fastballs at .410. And, you know, that's not bad. But again, it's just, it's easy to circumvent considering he's not looking to go up and take big swings to put balls in gaps most of the time. Some things to watch for when Harold's in the lineup, which he is a lot of the time since most pitchers that the Rockies face are right-handed, watch to see if his swing seems quicker than usual and if he's moving out of the box before his swing is finished. Oftentimes, when you're watching a hitter who likes to poke at pitcher's pitches and just put the ball in play instead of being focused on taking a swing and hitting the ball hard somewhere, is that they'll start moving their feet kind of as they throw the bat at the ball. And that's definitely something that I've observed with Harold occasionally this season. So watch to see if his feet are moving or if he's actually dedicated to finishing the swing and putting all that maximum momentum behind his swing into the ball to get him a more solid hit. I'm inventing words on the fly here, guys. Look at this. Isn't this great? A solider swing. So if he can reduce the amount of long drawn outness that his swing tends to look like it has sometimes, I think that it'll result in a higher bat speed and he'll be able to put balls in play a lot harder. Other than that, that's really it for Harold Castro. Let's move on to his platoon counterpart with player number five.
Player number five.
Alan Trejo has been in this organization for a long, long time. I can remember years back in like 2018 when I still had the MILB app on my phone with notifications turned on, seeing Alan Trejo get like RBIs and being notified. Oh, Alan Trejo singles in like the bottom of the seventh. The Isotopes lead the whoever. By some score to some score. Alan Trejo has been around forever, and he's kind of found a role on the major league team over the last few years. Currently, like I said earlier, he's platooning second base with Castro. So against lefties, he's in the lineup more often than not. And when he is in the lineup, he's usually batting sixth. Currently on the season in 32 games played, Alan is batting .225 with a .247 on base percentage and a .528 OPS. He is yet to hit a home run on the season. He has 10 RBIs. He's walked 3 times, struck out 21 times. He has a 37 OPS plus, 2 stolen bases, and no errors. So again, off the bat, a very, very similar comp to Harold Castro. A guy who has been platooning and doesn't have a ton of percentile ranking awareness simply because of his lack of playing time consistently. His max exit velocity is in the 8th percentile. Doesn't hit the ball super hard, even when he does. And sprint speed is in the 27th percentile. Outs above average is in the 14th percentile. And his arm strength is in the 42nd percentile. That's really all we have for him percentile-wise. Overall, my consensus on Alan has been about the same for the last few years or so, and it's going to remain the same this season. He's a fairly poor hitter and an okay fielder, right? The low exit velo is obviously a very good sign that he's a poor hitter. He struggles to get on base. He plays solidly wherever he's placed in the infield, which is usually second or third. Occasionally it's been shortstop, but most of the time it's either been second or third. Earlier in the season, he was put in late in games for Ellerice Montero, who was the starter at third base to begin the year before being demoted for his struggles defensively. That's where Alan was placed in the middle of games. So Alan has a reputation for being a solid defender. He's not going to make incredible plays defensively. That's what my eye test would suggest as well. He's not going to make many diving stops. And if he does make a diving stop, he's probably not going to get the out at first most of the time. He's just good at playing normal baseball, so to speak. Unfortunately, baseball isn't really normal most of the time. Like, you're going to need to be able to make excellent plays if you want to be a consistent contributor to a winning baseball team. And Alan, I don't really think fits that profile at this moment in time. Also, an interesting thing offensively, in terms of Alan's game, is that he's really good at hitting breaking balls, which is not something that most Colorado Rockies can say. He's currently at a batting average of .300 on breaking pitches, even though the expected batting average is .250. He's hitting .300 on breaking pitches. His average exit velo on breaking pitches is 87 miles per hour. That's the highest of all three pitch categories in terms of Alan's game. he's not even hitting fastballs at that high of a velocity, and he's hitting off speed just a few miles per hour slower. The fact that he can hit breaking balls is a major positive for him, considering the team as a whole struggles at doing so. Unfortunately, Allen can't hit fastballs. He struggles to hit fastballs. He's batting 208 against fastballs thus far this season, even though he has an expected batting average of 260 against fastballs. 208, it's not good. And an average exit velo of 82 miles an hour off of that pitch isn't great either. The eye test would agree with this. He has a lot of soft contact, generates a lot of soft contact on his swings, even on his hits. He hits breaking balls solidly and often swings under fastballs, which is very interesting. The fact that he sees fastballs most of the time and is under them almost all the time is very, very interesting. I don't know why that would be, but it's not the same for breaking balls. He's almost always on breaking balls, at least when I've seen him. You know, it seems like his strategy is to work his way later into counts and set himself up in a count where he knows a breaking ball is likely to be thrown, and then just hope that he can put that ball in play and that it gets down somewhere, which so far this season it has, right? Like we said, 300 batting average on that pitch. But again, that's not going to be consistent. You see fastballs most of the time. You have to be able to hit those pitches at a higher than 208 clip. He also hardly walks, so he really doesn't get on base a ton. And like I said earlier, he doesn't make defensive plays that are really excellent in any regard, and he just makes the routine ones most of the time. So I think the adjustment that I'd suggest for Allen would be to hit fastballs better. I know it seems fairly simple. Easier said than done, but I've noticed that in a lot of 0-0 counts, like first pitch of the at-bat, he does see a lot of fastballs. A lot of them, and he does look at a lot of them, or when he does swing, he is under them. He's gotta figure that out. I think if he figures that out and raises that batting average on the fastballs to maybe even like 230, like we're not even talking for anything excellent here, from 208 to 230, I think he would just be that much better of a hitter, get on base that much more, and it would really improve his game to the best that it could be. He's just got to get aggressive earlier in the count. That'll limit his two strike situations, and it'll put him in less stressful situations. I know he's good at hitting breaking balls, especially in two strike counts when breaking balls are thrown frequently, but just give yourself less stress in those at-bats. Take it easy. Focus on hitting fastballs more than breaking balls. Striking out less will certainly be the result of doing so. Metrics we'll monitor with Trejo will be his exit velo on fastballs. Like I said, currently it's only at 82 miles an hour, the lowest of all three pitch categories that he sees. That's got to change. That's just got to change if he wants to be a contributor to this team in the long term. So that's really going to be the only metric that we monitor. Things to watch for when we're talking about Allen. It's interesting because, like we said, we need him to be more aggressive in the counts. So for him to improve from his current position, I'd suggest that we watch to see whether or not he's more aggressive in 0-0, in 1-0, in 0-1 counts. Those are counts where fastballs are frequently thrown. So if he's taking hacks and he's actually putting that ball in play hard, it sounds crazy, but even if he were to hit that ball hard, if it was a fastball in that count, on the ground, not even in the air or on a line, it'd probably be better than him hitting it just back to the screen because he was under it, or just swinging through it because he's under it. So I think if we just monitor that with Trejo, see how aggressive he is early in those counts on fastballs, that will be a pretty good dictator about how good he is going forward as a hitter and as a contributor to this team as a whole. All in all, I think the summary for these players that we can extrapolate out to the team in general is that the Rockies pitchers just need to be better at balancing the cutter, sinker, and slider usage. Not a ton of pitchers on this team throw those unique pitches with those unique movements. Obviously, the slider's not unique, but the cutter, sinker, in terms of those two pitches, not a ton of Rockies pitchers throw them, but the ones that do can definitely improve if they balance that with their off speed, with their breaking pitches, in a way that allows them all to work off of each other and just create a more deceptive arsenal for the guys that do use it. Guys like Chase Anderson, guys like Jake Bird, guys like Carl Kaufman, who heavily rely on that cutter-sinker combination to some extent. And then the slider thrown in, I mean, that has a potential for success. Again, the cutter-sinker combination is not my ideal for pitchers at Coors Field, but it can definitely work. It's just that they're so rare, even in a day and age where those pitches are being thrown more, to just say, hey, let's go out and find a guy who throws a cutter, who throws a sinker. You can, but you're just going to make your job a lot harder. If you do find one, great. It's a solid base to work off of. But I think all in all, that's not something I would personally look for. Maybe I'd look for a guy who throws a good sinker. The point that I'm trying to make is that the Rockies pitchers, if they can balance that cutter, that sinker, that slider with their changeup, if that whole arsenal can be balanced better, they'll be a lot more effective in the long term. Secondly, Rockies hitters need to just be more aggressive. We mentioned this earlier in the year when we talked about Chris Bryant, when we talked about Charlie Blackmon, and the fact that they seem too selective at the dish, and it's actually impacting their ability to put the ball in play hard and put balls in a gap. It's great that you want to get on base, but sometimes you just need to say, hey, I'm going to take some initiative here and I'm going to put a barrel on a baseball and try and get something going here. That's how winning teams play winning baseball. If you know a guy throws a fastball 70% of the time on the first pitch for a strike, you might probably want to come up to that at bat thinking, hey, let's take a swing here. Like, that type of stuff is a mental adjustment that the Rockies could just approach their at-bats from that would really make them better, I think, at the dish. Lastly, something that's kind of gone understated, the Rockies kind of miss Brendan Rodgers, right? Think about the guys who have been platooning at second base in Trejo and Castro. Like, the average OPS plus between those two is like 49. That's really not good. 51 percentage points worse than the major league average hitter with, again, fairly solid defense, to be fair. But it doesn't compare to Brendan Rodgers. Brendan Rodgers won a gold glove in 2022. So defense hasn't really been a concern. Even though he finished with an OPS plus of 96 in 2022, I mean, you still get 13 home runs out of this guy, 63 RBIs, a .266 batting average. Like, the Rockies sorely miss Brendan Rodgers, and it's really disappointing that he was unable to contribute this season. At least it sounds like there's still some optimism that he might be able to return later on in the year. But the fact that he won't be able to contribute to the majority of this season is just really disappointing for a Rockies team that has aspirations of 500 baseball and maybe even above. So those are the three takeaways that I had from today's episode. All in all, if you've made it this far, thank you for listening to this episode of Adjusting for Altitude. Your listenership is very, very much appreciated. Share this episode with your friends, your family, or anyone who you know who might be an MLB fan or a Colorado Rockies fan. I'd really appreciate it. Until next week, I will see you guys then. Stay safe, stay cool. Go Rockies!
This has been Adjusting for Altitude with Christopher Nelson II. If you are indeed a fan of Colorado Rockies baseball or simply a fan of MLB content, follow this podcast on your favorite podcasting platform and share this podcast with your friends and family. Baseball in Colorado is a complicated situation, but it is certainly not unsolvable. Until our next episode, take care and go Rockies.